I'm Sarah Austin Jeunesse, The Moth's executive producer and longtime host of The Moth Podcast. Every week, we share true stories told live and without notes by real people from all walks of life. Stories about disastrous haircuts, May-December romances, photographing Pluto, fighting for justice, and so much more. Some stories make you laugh, some make you think, and many stay with you long after they're told. Discover the power of story. Follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Brian. I work at UnitedHealthcare.
So, Brian, why do you care?
I care because I don't want to leave anybody behind. I oversee one of the biggest resource centers in UnitedHealthcare. I see people walked in my office every day, just like my parents. They have no idea about the healthcare. I feel like they are my uncles, aunties. I treat these people like family. I'm Brian, and I'm committed to care.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at AmericaCures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
Welcome back to Take Command with Logan Paulson. I'm Grant Paulson. Next week's going to be really busy with free agency. Not only will we have our normal pods, but if big free agency news breaks, we'll get you some emergency breakdowns ASAP into your feed. So make sure you subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast. All right, I want to start here. I'm just going to go in the order that I saved these. Wolf Pack Party 3, I think, or something like that. These are always funny to read the name of these. Like, really? What is that? He says, always enjoy the pod. Can you guys break down the difference in former prospect Isaiah Simmons and Sonny Styles? He says, at the time, Simmons was a freak of freaks athlete, similar buzz post-combine. Obviously, Styles is bigger and better based on the combine results, but Simmons never was close to the eighth overall pick. So I don't necessarily see those guys as the same player. Having said that, I get the point. Like, everyone said Simmons was his can't-miss freak, unbelievable athlete. How would you juxtapose the two?
Yeah, well, I think it's important to understand, like, who those players are. And so, you know, Isaiah Simmons was like a safety. Like, he was this big, I think he was 6'4", 235, 240-pound type guy that everyone was kind of comping to Sean Taylor. And, again, the combine was crazy. The movement skills were crazy. He could play edge. He could play linebacker. He could do all these different things. I think the important thing to remember about football is it is a physical, violent football game. And the one thing Isaiah Simmons was not very good at was being physically violent when it came to tackling, when it came to taking on blocks, right? And so that was something that was always in the crawl. Like, he was this big athlete, right? It's the same thing when you're talking about, like, receivers, for example. Like, you can find big athletes everywhere, right? Like, Jeff Caldwell from Cincinnati, he's 6'5", 217, but he's probably going to go in the fifth round. A big reason for that is because he doesn't do some of the technical things at the position very, very well. When you watch the Sonny Styles tape, it's like that is not even on the radar for him. He is physical. He's downhill. He's instinctive. He knows how to take on blocks. He's an excellent tackler in space and in the box. And that's just something that when you watched Isaiah Simmons, that wasn't really a thing for him. Now, everyone kind of remembers, like, this is what I'd say, too, is in the YouTube era of highlights, which is a great tool for scouting because you can kind of, like, get a quick comp of all their big plays. It's easy to forget that those are their best plays. You also have to look at their worst plays. Like, what do their low lights look like? And so going back and watching some Isaiah Simmons film yesterday, like, the low lights were very, very low. And so I will say Sonny Styles, again, freak athlete, crushed the combine. But the most important thing about him and the evaluation is his film is fantastic. And I think that's the thing that you got to remember is that the fundamental football of Sonny Styles' game is fantastic. That's why, like, when we first started this process, Grant, and you were like, Sonny Styles at 7, I was like, absolutely, because he's objectively good at football. And Isaiah Simmons, that wasn't the case. He was a big athlete. They needed to find a home for, not overly physical.
Sonny Styles missed two tackles last year.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. I mean, this guy is a form legitimate open field tackler. Simmons was a freak athlete, you know, and I certainly understand the hype and the comps in terms of defensive players that could play multiple positions and move around and have freak profiles. But I just think Sonny Styles is a better football player, succinctly. It's a good question, though.
And it's like, way, when you watch, like when you watch ahead, some of these other guys, like Arvell Reese, you know, some of these guys that are like positionless, quote unquote, like the first thing you got to look at is, again, like there is a, there's a technicality of the position, but there's also a physicality requisite that both these guys check the box of. So, you know, obviously if you're a Commanders fan and you end up with Arvell Reese or Sonny Styles, which as we get closer and closer to the draft seems more and more unlikely, they are good. They're objectively good football players, quote unquote, right? Like, cause they do the fundamental things well and they're tough as hell. So I think that's the thing about them that make my confidence level significantly higher than with someone like Isaiah Simmons.
Here's a question from RSC. He says, hey, Grant, Logan, I'm addicted to Take Command. You guys do an outstanding job. Thank you very much. He says, I'd love to see a segment sometime on how some of the guys on reserve futures contracts are developing. He mentioned some guys specifically like Ja'Cory Brooks, Carlin Vigors, and Tim McKay on the offensive line. Any chance of some of those guys bubbling up to the main squad this year? So just candidly, I would say for both of us, we don't really get a lot of updates on those guys, and there's not a lot of intel or information. Like, I'm not allowed out at practice. You get to see the very beginning when they're stretching and doing a couple indo drill things. I don't know what your access is like even during practice, Logan. But that said, other than what the coaches say during the season, it's hard to get a lot of information on those guys. But I thought it was worth just bringing up to see, are there any names among those players who you're circling to take another look at training camp that you really were impressed by last year?
Yeah, well, I think it's the context here is super important because, again, like, it's very rare that these kind of practice squad guys like take a huge developmental step. Like it's something that is, it's just a hard environment, right? Because you're kind of like, if you're a receiver, sometimes you're playing DB in practice, like you're not getting reps with the team. So it really is up to you to kind of cultivate your own development arc and improve on your own pacing here. But like one of the guys I'm going to point to here is like, if you guys are familiar with John Keim, like at the end of every year, he'll go to the coaching staff and ask, are there any practice squad guys that stuck out? He'll ask players, is there anybody from the practice squad you think is kind of ascending? And the name that he came up with his on his podcast, and I texted him before the show just to confirm, is Ja'Cory Brooks, right? You know, a number of the coaches said he was really sharp with the routes. DB said he was hard to cover. Now, like when you hear that, everyone says, oh my gosh, like here's the next guy. He's going to be a starting receiver. Like he still has a long way to go before that happens. But I do think that like that's an important thing to acknowledge, right? He was practicing well. He was doing what he needed to do. People found him difficult to cover. Like that's good background. And so I would say Ja'Cory Brooks is a guy that to me sticks out as someone maybe coming into training camp. If he takes a couple steps, pushes for the 53 as a special teams guy to start and maybe your fifth wide receiver. But again, that's going to take a little bit of work on his part.
Landon, kind of a bigger picture thought here, but asks, he says, hey guys, lifelong Commanders fan, longtime listener and big fan of the pod. He says, I'm curious to get your thoughts on basically generating a rush with four. He says, you know, looking around the league, the teams who have continued to be successful and competitive, none of them have, you know, one of the elite tier pass rushers like Myles Garrett or Max Crosby. Seems like more consistent success comes from having multiple B+ guys rather than a star. He goes on to ask, my question is a defensive end worth investing the number 7 pick in? He talks about basically rushing the quarterback with four as opposed to like having one superstar be your top pass rusher. What are your thoughts just philosophically on that?
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
It's a great question and it's a great perspective. And so I'm going to do a couple things here. One is, like, I think when you watch some of these top pass rushers, for example, Myles Garrett, Micah Parsons in Dallas, Max Crosby, is I think defensive coordinators rely on those guys a lot. They rely on them a lot to be like physically dominant when they're one-on-one, which is good, which is important. That's an important part of the position. However, I think when you look at some of these teams with like the B plus pass rushers, like the coaches are more cognizant of scheming those players open. Like I think about watching the Super Bowl with the Seattle Seahawks, right? And kind of how they're able to, through pressure packages and design and spacing, able to create a lot of really good matchups there, right? And so what I would say is, like, I do think that there is like this weird crossroads where like teams with really good pass rushers do less schematically because they rely on that player to be more dynamic than teams that have less dynamic pass rushers. So like I think about the Minnesota Vikings, like how they create pressure through different spacings, different pressure looks. Seattle was kind of the same thing in the playoffs. Again, New England, very similar. And I think back to my time when I played, and the team that at the time was like the best at cultivating pass rush was the Dallas Cowboys. And what they used to do with DeMarcus Ware and Anthony Spencer, whatever the other guy's name was, number 93 for them, is they would not only would they rely on those guys to win their one-on-ones, but they'd also have an element of schematic elevation, which I think is something that needs to be considered in this specific question. Is like usually the good players will win, right? But are they winning enough is the question. Schematically, can we elevate those players? And I think when you look at Myles Garrett from 3 years ago, like one of his best years was when Schwartz was there, and they're moving them all around the formation to find the best matchup. J.J. Watt, moving them all around the formation to find the best matchup. There needs to get the most out of that player. There needs to be a schematic elevation. Like when you watch Las Vegas right now with Max Crosby, they're kind of like, hey, man, line up on the left side and go rush the passer. It's like, that's great, but are we maximizing that piece? I think about Micah Parsons in Dallas and then Micah Parsons in Green Bay. Like Micah Parsons in Green Bay is lining up over guards and centers and tackles, right? And creating this really dynamic, instant pressure. And so to answer the question, I think it's kind of a mix. Like when you have those average pass rushers, there's more schematic innovation happening. Usually, obviously, there's exceptions. Like the Philadelphia Eagles last year were kind of like, we're going to rush four, but they would still bring kind of exotic pressure looks to find good matchups. So to me, it's kind of this weird mix of talented teams don't usually do exotic things. And when they do exotic things, they maximize those players. So I think it's kind of a chicken or the egg thing with regards to that question.
Yeah, what he's getting at, and he kind of summarizes it with, are there certain positions outside of, obviously, quarterback, when it is more strategically advantageous to have a star-level player? Maybe this is a case for Jeremiah Love at 7. It was just interesting thought. I like our listeners are sharp, and it's something to throw out there. Just looking at Super Bowl winners, if you're working back from the result, Seahawks, Eagles, Chiefs, Rams, like you don't find one of those great edge pass rushers. Now, Aaron Donald, best defensive player in the league, got pressure from the interior. Chris Jones for Kansas City is an all-pro, one of the great defensive tackles of all time. There's actually much more of a case when you watch it, actually, and look at these. It's like the interior pass rushers of the Super Bowl winners. Now, that is also just, again, it's a sample where you're looking at who won the Super Bowl and then what are they good at. It's not always the best way to do it.
Right.
But look, this year, the final four teams had the best pressure rate from the D-tackle position mm-hmm. in the league. The top four were all in the championship game. So it's not necessarily nothing. But I thought that was a good question.
It's a good point. And like, so I think the other thing too is like teams are just getting better at tackle specifically and quarterbacks about kind of setting that high edge and stepping up in the pocket. And so having guys that are on the interior that can rush the passer and kind of compress the pocket are really important also there too. So,
all right, last one for the mailbag here. Greg wants to know, what about spending big at wide receiver in free agency? We've talked a lot about other positions already. We're going to get deeper into our wide receiver dive. I'm going to shoot you some guys to watch the tape on. I want to break down on Alec Pierce and Rashid Shaheed, Juwan Jennings, some of the top guys on the market in case they do spend big there. But we know they want weapons. We know they want speed. It would stand to reason with Terry McLaurin probably going into his final year, something we could talk about down the road, but it's very possible this could be his last season in D.C. based on the extension he signed. That's a real need. They have three guys under contract, and if you view just, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but hypothetically, if this is the last year of Terry, then beyond this season, you've got Jalen Lane and Luke McCaffrey under contract. Mm-hmm. That's a way, way, way bigger need than maybe people are thinking about.
Yeah, and I guess the more I thought about it, because, you know, I thought, oh, you know, you can get away with, like, the Alameda Zaccheaus route or something like that, like, where you get a really good player, kind of a good value down the board. But the more I think about it, the more I'm kind of – because, again, like, there was a period of time where I thought, oh, like, after we did – so after we did our free agent on the tight ends, we kind of took a deep dive on that. I kind of thought, oh, man, like, I don't know if there's the talent here, right? But then you look at the receivers, and I have to start watching them in earnest here probably today. But, like, I think about Pierce, I think about Shaheed, I think about Jennings, and I'm like, man, there's probably a more dynamic piece there for this offense. Now, it'll be more expensive, but I've kind of come around to this idea that maybe that's the way you solve the playmaker piece in the offense. I was talking to someone the other day, and basically it was like, you know, if you have Terry and you sign a big-name free agent and you look at this offense, at receiver, and you look at this offense, all of a sudden – it feels really dynamic, right? Like, because you have two outside playmakers, you've got a young kind of tight end room, which I, again, in this offense, I think will be elevated by scheme. Your offensive line's in a good spot. And obviously, young running backs, you need to do some work there in terms of free agency. But, like, it really covers up a lot of ails of the group just with one big perimeter signing. Like, if you were to sign a big name tight end, I still think you need to find someone on the perimeter opposite Terry. So, if you sign that big receiver first, kind of like spend your big money ticket item there, it kind of, it just changes the landscape of the offense in a really nice way. And it makes me think that that's going to be perhaps a more viable option than I thought when we first entered free agency.
Logan Paulson, Grant Paulson, take command. NFL free agency is coming. We're going to react to everything going on. We'll also continue to preview different positions as well as we get closer to the start of the league year. Appreciate everybody checking us out. Big thanks to our producer, Evan O'Brien. For Logan, I'm Grant. Saying so long.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.